Okay. Oh, and it's picking up my voice. Yay! Okay, so welcome to Onceable, Hypeable's Once Upon a Time podcast. I'm Jen, and tonight I'm joined by Karen and Tarek. Hello, guys.
Hey.
And there you are. And this week, I know you have that delay all the time. This week, we're going to discuss the latest episode, which was The Outsider. It's a very interesting episode. So, first off, let's get kind of how you guys felt about the episode. Was it a thumbs up, thumbs down? Did you love it, hate it? Were you kind of like, eh, it was all right. It was a means to an end. What did you think?
I thought it was pretty awesome. Yeah, I agree. This was a definite thumbs up for me. Probably one of my favorite episodes, actually. I thought the ending was fantastic, and I really loved Belle in this one. She's, like, one of my favorite characters now. I thought they did a great job with it.
Yeah, it was amazing seeing, like, Belle's storyline and, like, just the most random, like, it was random, but it was also awesome with how she interacted with Mulan in Fairy Tale World. That was, like, totally caught me off guard, but everything was perfect. And the fact that Prince Philip was cursed as this beast is, the creativity in this episode was amazing.
I really like how they all, like, it intertwined all these different stories and, like, we sort of saw Belle in between the two places that we saw her before. So it's like it filled in the gaps that we didn't have that information before. And it was really well written, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. I think this episode was really well done. And it connected a lot of storylines that we've been asking questions about. So we kind of see how, you know, Regina ends up with Belle. We see how Mulan and Philip meet, which I think is really fantastic to kind of connect those little pieces in such small, subtle ways. You know, it's always enjoyable to see that. Just a quick recap of the show in case anyone forgot in the last couple days. We have a lot of Hook in this episode. It's very Hook-centric. Hook is on his mission to take out Rumpelstiltskin, and so his first play is to kind of trap Belle in the library, and he's telling Belle he's going to kill her. Belle hides in an elevator, calls Rumpelstiltskin, who comes to save her. Prior to being trapped with Hook, Belle had been with Rumpelstiltskin, who explained to her that he needed to go on a mission to find his son, Bay, and that he found a way to do it by using a potion, which he only had enough of for one person, and an item that was dear to him, which was Bay's cloak. So Rumpel is preparing to leave, and Belle's encouraging him and thinks it's wonderful that he's going, and Hook intervenes. When Belle's trapped in the library, Rumpel comes to save her, and while Rumpel's doing that, Hook goes and ransacks the shop and takes the cloak so that Rumpel cannot travel outside of the town. So then we see the flashbacks with Belle and Mulan, and we see Belle, the bookish Belle, starts off in the tavern and realizes she wants to go on the adventure to capture the Yaragwai, I think is how you say it. Dreamy, who is still dreamy and not grumpy at the time, convinces Belle that she should go and she should do this. So she goes with them on the trip, and she kind of becomes this fierce little warrior princess. And the men she's with make fun of her because, you know, she only knows how to read a book. She doesn't know how to fight. She's, you know, they find her useless. Except Belle needs to read the book to tell them where to find the Yaragwai. And so they take her advice of where to find them, and then they kick her off the cart and send her on her way. Belle lied to them and actually knows where the Yaragwai is and goes to find him herself. And that's when she runs into Mulan. And she and Mulan kind of don't hit it off right away, but eventually make a pact to help each other and find the beast. Then we have, back in the real world, we have Hook has the cloak, and Belle decides she's going to find Hook and get the cloak back because it means so much to Rumpel. So Belle goes on to Hook's ship. She discovers where it is. She goes and she ends up finding Archie. She releases Archie, but she stays behind to kind of basically fight Hook to get the cloak. And so she almost does get off the boat with the cloak. However, Hook kind of grabs her at the last minute, and Rumpel shows up. And Rumpel is not happy, to say the least. So he kind of engages Hook in a fight, and Belle begs Rumpel to leave him alive. He's not that person. He doesn't need to kill him. So it's kind of that kind of plays out for a while. And Belle convinces Rumpel to step away from Hook and just leave him be. At the very end, what we see is Archie returns to Henry, who is very, very upset that Archie was dead. He was having a really hard time dealing with it. So Archie returns, and everyone's a little bit shocked, and Emma realizes that it had nothing to do with Regina and that she needs to make it right. And then the last kind of thing that we see is Rumple at the border with Belle, and he puts the potion on the cloak, steps over the border, remembers her, and is ready to go. And Belle's giving him a hug goodbye, and Hook shows up and shoots Belle, and that knocks her over the line. So she then forgets everything. So that's kind of where it ends up. And then, of course, in the fairy tale world, the last scene in the fairy tale world is Mulan is injured, and Belle goes to save the Yerugwai, or to kill the Yerugwai, and she realizes he's writing in the sand, and that it says save him. So she sprinkles fairy dust on him, and he becomes Prince Philip. And that is how Prince Philip and Mulan meet. And at the very end of that section, Belle's going off on her own to go back and save the beast, as she says, which is, of course, referring to Rumple. And that's when Regina sees her and takes her and puts her in her tower. So that kind of sums up the episode, really, just kind
of
briefly.
Don't forget the fact that someone drove into Storybrooke.
Oh, there is the driving into Storybrooke, which is questionable, because who would drive into Storybrooke? It's kind of a big deal, as we all know, because now they're all, and they are a little bit afraid that the outside world is going to encroach on them. Like, the dwarves want to go back to the Enchanted Forest. They don't care if there are ogres there. They just want to go home, because there, at least, they know what they're dealing with. Here, it's a whole nother story. They have no idea what they're faced with. And then you have Snow and Charming, where, you know, Snow wants to start a new life here. She wants to get a house. She wants to be with her family. And Charming's like, why can't we just go back? And so they're kind of having this back and forth about how that's going to all play out in the end, and where their lives really are, and, you know, what's really true for them. So that's, I think that'll be an upcoming conflict as we move forward. So what did you guys think with the opening scene with Rumple using Smee as his little test animal?
I love that they were back together. Like, there's just this Captain Hook and Smee back together again. Yay. It made me kind of happy.
Yes, that part was interesting. And I found it really interesting that he knew how to find Smee. Do you know, like, I think that's what surprises me. Like, how is he wandering around Storybrooke and no one's noticing the man with the hook on his hand? You know what I mean? Like,
He went a surprisingly long amount of time without getting caught.
Yeah, and even in the end, he didn't really get caught. He kind of showed his hand, so to speak. Do you know what I mean? Like, he kind of just like, yep, I'm here. Let's just do this. I'm done with waiting for Korra.
Yeah.
So I think that was really interesting, too. And that, you know, Rumple's test with Smee, I think, kind of gave a lot of things away, in a sense. Had he not used Smee, Hook wouldn't have the information that he had. So what do you guys think of, we saw a lot of Belle. Last night was a very Belle-centric episode. And Belle has this overwhelming just acceptance of Rumple. She accepts the fact that he's going to leave and go and find his son. She accepts the fact that he's, you know, not always on the up and up, but he is trying. She's become very accepting of who he is and what he has to offer, even if it's very little. So what did you guys kind of think of how her character has that overwhelming acceptance of Rumple no matter what?
See, honestly, I'm kind of annoyed by Belle because of this acceptance, just because it feels like she's not accepting him for who he is, which is this guy who's just like power hungry and like and basically not necessarily evil, but has evil tendencies, but she keeps trying to change him. And that's like, it's not like she's accepting of him as he is. And she just feels like you can do better. Come on. Like, I get that she's trying to coach him to be better, but at the same time, it's just kind of ridiculously annoying how many times he does something bad and she's proven that he can't change. And then she's just like, no, it's fine. He'll change. It's cool.
Yeah. I kind of agree with that, because I think that this could turn into sort of a dangerous thing for her to keep trusting Rumpelstiltskin like she does. But on the flip side of that, as far as we can tell, he is willing to change. So I don't think it's necessarily just like her trying to change him and he's just doing the same thing that he's always been doing. I kind of like how she sticks by him and she sees the good that's in his heart. And it is a little like naive of her to think that he's just going to suddenly become this, you know, person that doesn't do anything after he's had, you know, how many hundreds of years of being the Dark One. But at the same time, you know, if he's willing to change, I like that she keeps having faith in him. What kind of surprised me during the scene, though, where Rumple leaves and then he says that she can't go with him. Like, her acceptance of that, it made sense to me, but I don't know. Like, Rumpelstiltskin didn't seem all that upset that he couldn't take her with him. Like, he sort of just seemed, like, not happy that she couldn't go with him, but it didn't bother him at all. Did you guys catch that at all?
Yeah, it was ridiculously easy for him to leave her behind.
Yeah, there was the feeling of, not like he was quite blowing her off, but in a sense that she was not the most important thing to him in that moment. In that moment, yeah. His only focus is Bay. That's it. And so he's kind of willing to give up her in order to find his son. Which, I mean, it's a trade-off for him, I guess. It's not an easy trade-off, but it is a trade-off. And I guess that later appears, like, when he's willing to leave her behind, knowing Hook is there. Do you know what I mean? Like, that was the part that bothered me, was that he was gonna go on his mission, he was gonna do it right then, and the whole thing was that knowing Hook is a threat, knowing that Hook is there, he was still willing to go right away. So that was the part I found kind of odd, in a sense, because Hook is a clear and present danger. He's just, because you tell him don't do that, it doesn't mean he's not going to. There's not a lot left for Hook to lose.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, he should have, if anything, brought Belle with him just as a safety precaution. He could have, like, he made that potion in the first place. He could have made more, and then, like, she could have gone with him, and she would have been safe from Hook. And now she is basically forgotten herself because he chose not to bring her with him.
Well, not even that, but he could have brought her to Emma and Snow and Charming and said, Hook is here, because there are implications in the fact that Hook is in Storybrooke. Do you know what I mean? That means Cora might not be far behind, and nobody else, like, that seemed to be an irrelevant factor last night. That was the other part of the storyline that bothered me a little bit, was that everybody knew. I thought when they came back, they made it very clear that Hook and Cora were together, that they ran into both of them. So knowing that Hook is in Storybrooke, you have to almost think that, well, maybe Cora's not too far behind. And that would be a big concern, I would think. So it's a little bit odd that never came up with anybody. That was never, and that Rumpel didn't feel the need to tell other people, that he just decided, okay, I'm going to go find my son, and that's what I'm doing now. He was so hyper-focused on that nothing else was relevant. Again, it was just an odd kind of part of the storyline for me.
Yeah, so there were a couple things actually that stuck out to me like that, where, where was Cora this whole episode? You'd think she would have been milling about and doing something, but not even that, like, a lot of the parts, I mean, I really love this episode. It is definitely one of my favorites, but I felt like some of the points were kind of contrived, because some of it seemed a little easy, like how you were saying, Tarek, how there was just one potion, and, like, why couldn't Rumpel just make another potion, or how Belle happened to find the knot in the rope and figured out that Hook had come on his ship, or, like, the Beast could write and tell her that he, who he was, and just things like that really stuck out to me this episode, and, yeah, I thought they were kind of strange, too.
Yeah, it's especially weird considering that they had a prisoner that they're trying to get information out of on their boat, and they're just like, nah, he's safe, no one will find him, he's good. And so, like, neither Cora nor Hook are just guarding their prisoner. They're just like, whatever, it's cool. And, like, I'm like, you normally guard your prisoner from people.
Well, by then, A, the ship is invisible, but also by then, Hook got what he needed out of him. He didn't need him anymore. The only
thing that
Archie getting out does is let everyone know that Hook and Cora are there. I almost wonder if Cora was playing someone else. If she was, if she had shapeshifted into someone else to be around the town to gather information.
Yeah, like, maybe we'll see that in the next episode or something and figure out where she was.
Right, because I find it really hard to believe that she would allow Hook to kind of go all willy-nilly all over town and do the things that he did if she wasn't ready for him to do it. Because she made it very clear that he was not to do those things. He could not have his revenge until it was time. So it makes me believe that Cora's plotting and manipulating something somewhere, and that Hook was kind of given the opportunity to do that purposefully by her. Because I don't think she would let him ruin her kind of surprise on everyone.
I have another question about Archie, too. Like, how did Archie know about Rumpelstiltskin's cloak, like Bay's cloak? I mean, would Rumpel really have told him that? Do we believe that he would have divulged that sort of information to him?
No, but I'm almost still wondering if somehow Smee knew, because Smee stole the cloak. From all I can gather, is that Smee somehow got in and stole the cloak. Because that's why he turned Smee into a rat.
Right, but it was Archie who told Hook about the cloak.
But do we know if he told him about the cloak or if he told him about his son?
Oh, okay. And then maybe just Hook made the deduction from there that it was going to have something to do with that. That would make a bit more sense, I think.
Yeah, and Smee could have easily followed him and watched him through a window while he told Belle all about it, so he would have known where to find it. Because clearly right, by then, Smee knew what was going on. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. There's lots of questions. What do you guys think about Belle in the Enchanted Forest with Mulan? I really liked that version of Belle. Not necessarily the bookish version, but like the combination of the bookish girl as well as this kind of girl trying to find herself and be strong and be, you know, kind of a little bit like a warrior, but still being smart about everything she's doing.
Yeah, I loved her. She's kind of like a Hermione Granger of like storybook.
That's
like,
true.
It was great.
That's very true.
She's just, like, adventurous, but also really, really smart. And, like, Mulan was, like, Harry. And, like, Ron was, like, Prince Philip. And I don't know. I think I'm going places now. Yeah. But anyway.
I think it's a stretch right there. It's a stretch.
I thought you were saying that Mulan was hairy. Like, she has a lot of hair. Like, it really confused me for a second. But, no, I agree. Yeah, more Harry Potter references. I like the Hermione reference there. I agree. I really, really liked the scene where Belle was drinking. I thought that was hilarious when she just took like this huge mouthful of mead and turned towards the camera. Like, I was definitely laughing out loud there. And I thought she looked really awesome in her red outfit. And yeah, I liked the version of her that was more adventurous rather than just like the bookish version of her. It was definitely one of the reasons why she's bumped up there on my favorite character list now.
Yeah, it was just a really fun kind of progression of character for Belle. And again, that reflects who she is in Storybrooke right now as well, and how she became that Belle. So I thought it was a really nice thing to see for her. So what about Mulan? We get to see Mulan for the first time before she's really, you know, met up with Philip and Aurora and kind of become a I'm trying to think. When we first meet Mulan, she's a little bit bitter and a whole lot angry. And so this Mulan is a little bit different. She's not quite as edgy as the Mulan we meet in the beginning. So what did you guys think of this Mulan? And clearly they're in Mulan's country or area of the Enchanted Forest.
It really wanted me to see more backstory for her. Like, I wanted to see, see the story of her saving her people, like, the first time. Like, the one that made her the warrior. I wanted, like, I can't wait for that episode, because seeing her in her environment was great. And like her, like saying to Belle that she ruined her hunt and she's been hunting for this monster for like days. And Belle's like, oh, I found him in a day. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah. When she was talking about her time in the army and stuff. And I was like, I really want to see that. That's going to be really cool. I liked her a lot during this episode too. And I liked how she appreciates valor and bravery so much, and she, you know, didn't want anything to do with Belle at first, but then once she saw how intelligent she wasn't, you know, unwilling to go back on what she said and say, you know, hey, you're right, I was wrong, you know, let's do this together. I thought that was really cool. And actually, one of my favorite lines from this episode was when Mulan was beating up the other soldiers or the guys or whatever, and the one guy was like, wait, you're a... And she goes, yeah, I know. And she, like, punches him out. That was so funny.
Yeah, that was really funny. And I am so interested to get more of Mulan's backstory in the army and how she even got into the army, if it's similar to the story we know of Mulan, where she kind of sneaks in and all that stuff. So I'm really excited. I like Mulan as a character. I think there's a lot there to explore with her, especially now that she's reunited with Philip, and we know that they have a long stretch before they find Aurora. So I'm really curious to see how that kind of all comes about and plays out with them.
Especially when it comes to how we were wondering at the end, like when Philip I guess he didn't die, but when the Dementor came and got
the Wraith.
when that happened and he sort of turned and he said, I think he said, I love you or whatever, and we weren't sure who he said it to, it would be interesting to see him and Mulan interacting before they find Aurora to see maybe how close they actually did get, if something did happen between them. I'm definitely interested in learning that.
Yeah, I think that's a great storyline to explore as well, because it was kind of questionable. We debated about that a lot with that whole I love you line. And then there's the question of when Korra said he isn't dead, there's a way to bring him back. His soul is just misplaced. Do you know what I mean? So that could lead into that whole storyline as well, which would be interesting to see how that all plays out. Like, you know, we did talk about that too. Like, where does the soul go? How does that work? So I'm very curious. So what did you guys think about Philip being the Uruguay? Like, that was surprising.
It was really interesting, because I feel like that probably wouldn't have been, I guess it must have been the first time that he's been doused with water, because otherwise he should have been able to just like write on a cave in the cave that he lived in. Feel like, hey, if you pass this cave, I'm trapped in a curse, please help me out. If he could write, I feel like he would have written for help. But that just surprised me.
That's what I mean when some of this just felt really contrived, you know? Like, I mean, why didn't he think of some other way to communicate with the people instead of, like, setting their fields on fire or something like that?
Oh, he could have done, like, a enchanted forest crop circle with their fields and, like, written help.
That is the best. Yeah, I don't know. Again, it's... Maybe he wasn't sure anyone could read it, because maybe he doesn't know the language of the people there, because he's in a different land. He's not in his own land. Like, I don't know.
But he wrote it in Chinese, which was the weird thing.
Yeah, it's one of those questionable plot points, but it is what it is. We have Prince Philip, and it's different from the original tale of Sleeping Beauty. I don't believe Prince Philip in Sleeping Beauty gets turned into a beast by Maleficent, correct?
Yeah.
Like, okay. I'm like, I didn't miss that somewhere along the line. So, I mean, I think it's an interesting new look at the Snow White mythology, where he gets changed into an animal and that's why he's sent away. And now he's met up with Mulan. So, I mean, it's all very different. But I think it was a nice kind of addition to get more Philip in there, because he was only on the first episode for like 10 seconds, maybe, before he got offed by the Wraith. So, I mean, I think it's a good way to kind of go back and look back on those characters that we've now lost because we're back in Storybrooke and not in the Enchanted Forest.
And, you know, just like real quick before we leave like the topic of Mulan, I just want to say how freaking cool it would be if ABC released like a map of the Enchanted Forest, just so we could see exactly where these lands are and how they interact. And like how do you go from going in Mulan's land to like being in Aurora's or like... Bells.
Yeah, how they're
like,
all it's interconnected.
Just, exactly. Like, I feel like that would be really cool.
So, dear
that
ABC,
would be awesome.
This is our plea for a lovely little map so we know where everything is in the Enchanted Forest and the names of the different places. Thank you. There we go. Not that they'll ever listen, or, you know, not that they ever listen to this podcast, but write in, people. Send them all nice little notes at their official Once Upon a Time Twitter or something that we would love a map. It's a very good idea, Tarek. All right, back in Storybrooke, we kind of have the whole thing, the whole scene, if you will, with Rumple and Hook, and Rumple's just ready to kill Hook. He's done, he's angry, and he wants to just kind of kill him, and Belle's telling him not to. Belle's convincing them that he's better than that, that he doesn't have to kill, and Hook is kind of just egging him on, like, go ahead and do it, go ahead, this is what I want. Because I think in the end, it kind of is what Hook wants. Hook wants it to be done so that he can be with, you know, Mila, but he also wants it so that it discredits Rumple with Belle, in a way. So, what did you guys think about Hook's whole kind of, I mean, he was pretty angry, and he was, I think it's the kind of most angry, deceitful we've kind of seen him thus far. Like, he always tended to have a redeemable quality when we saw him before interacting with people. But now, there was nothing really redeemable about him in this episode.
I think it was pretty obvious that he had a death wish. I mean, he just wanted it to be over, and he wanted to ruin Rumpelstiltskin as much as he could. And I guess, like, he wasn't really redeemable this episode, but I still felt bad for him because I knew that, like, he just wanted it to be over so he could be with Mila. And I was like, you know, I mean, I really understand where he's going from. I obviously don't agree with what he's doing or even for what Rumpel did for that matter. But I like how the whole scene played out and how Belle knew that Hook was just trying to get Rumpel to forget, you know, the little bit of humanity that he's gained recently being around Belle, and that, you know, she saw through that and she helped Rumpel to stop. I think that was a huge step for Rumpel to go in.
It's really interesting because I actually find myself siding a lot more with Hook in the Hook versus Rumpelstiltskin thing, just because what was his wife's name? Mila?
Yes.
Mia?
Mila.
Mila. Okay, right. So, like, I feel like Mila was just kind of, you know, she was being a horrible person, a horrible wife, and a horrible mother, and she ran off with Hook, but that wasn't Hook's fault. Hook wasn't, like tempting her necessarily. Like she wanted to go. Hook wasn't just like, oh, yeah, ditch them all. Like, come with me, screw them. Like, I mean, to some extent he was, but it was mostly Mila, I feel. And so I feel like Hook is being punished for something that Mila did, and I don't like that. Like, I don't get it. And then Rumpelstiltskin had to go and kill Mila, which was just cruel. And so, yeah, I'm with Hook on this one, though. And I hated seeing him get beat up, especially because he's way too hot. He can't ruin that face.
Oh, Tarek, you crack me up. Yeah, having him getting hit in the face is not good. Leave the moneymaker alone, people. Come on. No.
Exactly.
But, I mean, I don't know. It's so hard. Because Hook is so set on revenge. And I think that's the part that's hard. Because not only is he set on revenge against Rumpel, but he's set out to hurt anyone in Rumpel's world if it means that he can get revenge on Rumpel. That's the difference. Rumpel paid back Mila because Mila was the one who wronged him, not necessarily Hook. So he kind of settled the score with Mila, if you will. Whereas Hook is angry at Rumpel, but he's willing to hurt Belle. He's willing to hurt anyone that will hurt Rumpel. And I get that's kind of how he feels as to what happened between, you know, him, Rumpel, and Mila. But at the same time, it was really between Mila and Rumpel. Hook was kind of collateral damage in a sense. So I know.
Yeah, I feel like Hook would do a lot more to, like, I feel like in all the episodes that we saw Rumpelstiltskin in, we never really saw him harm someone else for the, like in the way that Hook is trying to harm everyone. Like, he wasn't attacking everyone. He was trying to help people. And then if those people wanted other people harmed, he would help. But it was never really like he would, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, he had a target, and that was his one target. It wasn't like there was peripheral people. He wasn't like, I'm mad at Snow White, so I'm going to kill Prince Charming. You know,
it wasn't
that for him. Whereas that's exactly what Hook is up to doing. That's what he wants to do. He wants to make Rumpel feel the loss that he felt. Which, again, I mean, I understand the idea of it, but Belle has done nothing to Hook, whereas Mila did do something to Rumpel. It's kind of an odd justification, but it's still there.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. And I think part of the reason why Rumpel, you know, did the things he did or didn't hurt the people that, you know, he didn't hurt was because he knows that people are more useful to him alive. You know, he's this big manipulator, and if they're dead, then he can't get them to do things for him. And I think Hook, like you guys said, is just bent on revenge. And like Belle said, you know, his heart is rotten. And I see that a little bit more. I mean, I think both parties are at major fault here. But to me, Rumpel keeps getting more and more redeemable, whereas Hook keeps going further and further down. Although it's going to be interesting to see what Rumpel acts like now that Belle isn't going to be there to be his conscience. I think that's going to be really interesting. And also, I'm curious to find out if Hook maybe starts redeeming himself if he comes in more contact with Emma, because we saw that, you know, he sort of did have feelings for her, or he was willing to work with her at least a little bit earlier on in the season. So it would be interesting to see maybe Rumpel go down a darker path and maybe Hook become more of a good guy now.
I totally have that comment about Rumpel and who's going to restrain him now. Like, what happens now?
Oh.
that's totally like one of the next talking points, I'm just saying. But yeah, look, that was my big thing. Once I realized what happened to Belle, and you kind of knew, she was dangling way too close to that line. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. She was like her hand it over the coming. Line. I'm like, are you stupid?
And I was like really? That is an accident waiting to happen. What are you? A step away. That you have to have, like, at least a 5-foot, you know, leeway on that puppy. So if you fall, you don't fall outside of it. But oh no, Belle, you had to dance on the line. So yeah, like you could kind of tell, like I just had a bad feeling as soon as I was like, no, step away. But she didn't, so now she has no memory. And my concern is that now Rumpel has absolutely no one to make him remember that he can be better. And without that, I'm not sure we're going to like the Rumpel we're going to see from now on. Especially because he's going to be bitter. Because I think once he crossed back over the line, I don't think he can leave now for Bay. I think he's had his one in and one out kind of thing with the cloak. I don't know how it works. Like, the details weren't really clear. But I'm willing to, I suspect that he stepped over, then he stepped back. And that's kind of his one free pass. I don't know how long it lasts or how long it works. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know about that. I kind of thought it was a permanent thing because that potion turns the cloak or the hat in Smee's case into a talisman, and I just sort of assumed that was like a permanent thing.
I was overthinking it like during the episode. I was just like, so if it's a talisman and you didn't choose a necklace, does that mean when you shower you have to keep the thing on? Because otherwise when you take that off, then you forget who you are? I'm like, bad choice in talisman, but that was just
interesting. No, that's a good thought. Yeah.
Good point.
Very interesting.
Because like you can't like talismans, you have to keep on for them to work. And I feel like if you have a cloak, and like what if it's like the middle of summer, like you're gonna be scorching hot in that thing.
You're also gonna look very strange. But that's just me over. With the cloak wrapped around your neck the whole time while you're out like looking for someone. You know, it's an interesting thought process because again. You're right, the talisman wasn't a piece of jewelry or something that's easily left on your body. If that talisman falls off, you're kind of in trouble. So, I mean, I don't know. I have the feeling that Rumpel won't leave now. Because at some point, doesn't he ask Emma? Didn't we see that in some random clip somewhere? That he asks Emma to help him go find his son? Or am I making that up? I could be making.
I remember us discussing that, and I hadn't actually seen that preview, but I remember us discussing part of that and remember you guys talking about the fact that he had asked Emma. So maybe he's staying in Storybrooke to deal with Hook and he wants Emma to go find his son while he chases down Hook.
Maybe. Again, it's one of those things that we just have to wait and see because we don't know. We don't have a lot of answers. We don't know how the potion works. We don't know how the talisman works. There's so many things that are, like, up in the air around that whole scenario. There wasn't a lot of explanation. It was just, here, this works. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how moving forward, how Rumpel either becomes more the Dark One or stays kind of where he's at. So, personally, I'm not opposed to seeing more of the Dark One. You know, let's liven things up a little bit. But I kind of like Rumpel changing, too. It's nice to see some redemption in him. One of the big things is that Archie showed up at Emma and Snow's door. Hey, I'm back from the dead. What does that now mean for Regina? We saw Emma's reaction, and Emma was a little bit mortified that she accused Regina, even though initially she didn't want to, only to find out that it was Cora that had done it. So what do you guys think about that? How do you see that playing out come the next couple of episodes?
I think what Emma said, where she said, you know, they're all going to pay for this now, I feel like that's a big neon sign blinking at us, like, you know, that something ominous is going to happen. And like what you were saying with Rumpel, you know, is he going to go down the darker path or not? Both Rumpel and Regina are sort of at a crossroads right now, and it's going to be interesting to see where they choose to go, because either one of them could go in either direction. And I mean, I know that Rumple basically lost Belle, but there's still a chance. I don't think it's like totally going to be permanent. I think they're going to work out some way to get her memory back, because that would just be really crappy if she like stayed a completely new person this whole time. So they both sort of have something good pulling them in one direction and some bad things pulling them in another. And for them to both go bad or both go good doesn't really make sense to me. So I think we're going to see one of them go one way and one go the other way, which either way would be interesting. I'd like to see both Regina and Rumple, you know, do either one, really.
Yeah, it would be really weird to have all of a sudden have, like, the two, like, main antagonists from the entire show both turn good. So I like the idea of one of them going on the dark side. Assumingly, it's going to be Rumpelstiltskin because he's the dark one. And then Regina turning into more of, like, the good person that she used to be before magic. I feel like it's more realistic for Regina to go back to the person she was before magic than it was for Rumple, because magic is all he is. And as a magical being, he's just an ass and he's evil. So I feel like it's more realistic for that to happen.
So yeah, no, I see where you guys are coming from. And it will be an interesting thing to see which road they take on their kind of crossroads at the moment. Did anyone else find it odd that no one had a really strong reaction to Cora being in Storybrooke? Like, I felt like the whole, oh, Cora and Hooker here was kind of just like, oh, yeah, you know, they're here, great. I would have expected a stronger reaction from people knowing that they were in town, because they are dangerous, especially Cora. And I just felt like that was really downplayed.
It was totally downplayed. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I expected so much more of a reaction, I guess, than what I got. But we'll see what next week brings. Maybe next week, like, we'll lead with the reaction.
Okay, so I assume Belle knew about the whole Cora and Hook thing when they're coming through the portal, right? So what I don't understand, I guess, the most, just for the, like, is why she had Archie run off the boat, and then she was like, I'm just going to stay here and not warn anyone, or not tell anyone about the invisible boat first before you step on it. I feel like,
yes!
That was just like, I feel like that was just a dumb move.
That's like the typical dumb girl in the horror movie. Don't go down the stairs. You're going to go down the stairs. Don't get on the invisible boat. Don't get on the invisible boat. And yet, there she goes. Do you know, so I think that was just one of those typical kind of plot devices where the girl's going to do what the girl's going to do, and it is what it is kind of thing. No, I'm with you. I was like, really? You're just going to go it alone? And again, nobody thought to alert Emma and everyone that Hook was in town. I think that's the part that surprises me the most. Well, I know Rumple had his agenda and everything. I would have expected a little sharing of knowledge and information with them, but c'est la vie. So where do you guys think Cora was this episode? She was nowhere to be found, and that makes me nervous, because really, that's not her style.
I really like your theory that maybe she's masquerading as somebody else around town and just gathering information. And, you know, in the last episode, she was like, I don't know who I killed. I'm new to town. I don't know who anybody is. So maybe she's, you know, figuring out who everybody is, who they're fairy tale counterpart is, and using that information, just kind of storing it for now so that she has it for later when she maybe wants to manipulate people or go after somebody important or something like that.
Yeah, I really feel like she's kind of amongst the people at the moment, because it's kind of like a know thy enemy. You get in there, you see where everyone's at, you see what will create the most havoc, and then you utilize that. And so we'll see. So I'm really curious about Cora and if she knows what Hook was up to. Like I said, that's my big thing. Did she know, or did Hook kind of go rogue while she was out doing something else? So again, more questions for hopefully the next episode or the next couple of episodes to be answered.
I actually have another question about Hook really quick. I believe this happened when they were on the ship, when Belle and Hook were on the ship and they were downstairs talking. And Hook said, Belle said that Rumple was going to be going after his son or whatnot. And Hook says, what makes you think he wants to be found? And that line just really stuck out to me because it sort of made me wonder if Hook knows something more about Bay and where he is or what he's doing. Did you guys get that at all?
I did, actually, now that you mentioned that. So again, that could link back to the idea that Bay is somehow Peter Pan.
Oh, right. That would make sense.
That would be one explanation as to why Hook would know of him or know him. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was that kind of undertone from him when he said it. Again, he could have just been antagonizing him, but it did seem to have a little more weight than the simple, you know, antagonistic things he was saying prior to that.
Do we know if for certain Balefire went to Emma's world and not, like, do we know 100% that he went to Emma's world and not Neverland? Like, because when he jumped through the portal, when Rumpelstiltskin, when they try to escape, I feel like there's a possibility that he went to Neverland instead of the our land. Or is that for sure known?
I was wondering that too, but didn't Bay want to go to the other land? Like, he wanted to go to a land without magic so that his father wouldn't have to deal with being the Dark One and wouldn't be corrupted by the power anymore. So, I mean, Neverland has magic. It has, you know, Tinkerbell and fairy dust and stuff like that. So I guess it would make more sense that he went to the real world rather than Neverland.
Okay, because, I mean, it's interesting because I feel like that bean is what took Hook to Neverland, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, and so I feel like that same bean would have then brought him to Neverland, and he would have thought, oh, maybe it's a portal to a land without magic. Please be a land without magic. And then he accidentally ends up in Neverland.
But remember that the shriveled up bean is also what took Korra and Hook to the real world.
Oh, I feel like it's got to be like 50-50. Like, the kind of bean that you get gets to Neverland and then the other kind goes to the real world.
Pretty buff.
I don't know. I don't know. I wish we had more information on Bay, and we just don't have it. So hopefully by the end of the season, we'll have answers to those questions. Because I feel like we've been asking those questions for, like, a year now. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're the same questions, and I just want some answers to them.
Yeah, I feel like every episode we keep getting more questions and less answers. So we do need some answers coming up pretty soon.
I know.
Just another way the show is like Lost.
Yeah, there are some comparisons. You get one little answer, and then you're left with 20 more questions that are 10 times more significant. So, but it's good. That's what keeps you watching. That's what keeps you hooked. So I'm all for it to some extent. Just, you know, tie up one before we start with, like, four other ones, please.
Exactly.
Okay, so next week, at the end of this episode, we had the stranger plow into Storybrooke. So there's a huge question for you. Who is it and how did they find them? And I meant to go back and look at the license plate because they specifically zoom in on the license plate. And it has a string of, like, numbers and letters, and I couldn't see them. So if anyone knows if the license plate has any relevance or means anything, please put something in the comments and let me know. And then the other thing was, the plate was a Pennsylvania plate, I'm pretty sure. So not that that has anything to do with anything specific, but it was from Pennsylvania, and they're all the way. Storybrooke is in Maine, so the person definitely drove quite a ways to get to Storybrooke. So next week's episode is In the Name of the Brother, and we go back and we're visiting the lovely Dr. Frankenstein again. So the synopsis for the episode is, Dr. Whale is tasked with mending Hook's wounds and performing surgery on the stranger whose car crashed upon entering Storybrooke. But some of the townspeople fear that the stranger may have seen magic, which could expose their true identities to the world, and think that leaving him to die would be the best solution. Meanwhile, as Mr. Gold tries to reunite with a despondent Belle, Korra attempts to reunite with daughter Regina. And in the land that was, Victor desperately wants to prove to his disapproving father that he can, indeed, bring back the dead. And we know that part of the episode is in black and white. So anytime that we're going back to where Victor is, his world is in black and white, which, again, is one of those things that I find completely amusing. So we will have a very, it sounds like, a fairly heavy Victor-centric episode, which again is a really curious thing because Dr. Whale is just such an intriguing character. Like, to have Frankenstein thrown in with all of these other characters, again, it leads me to a bunch of questions. You know, I like, why? Why is Frankenstein a literary character thrown in with a bunch of fairy tales? So I don't know.
Yeah, it goes to have the question, like, how far are they willing to go to include literary references in mixing with fairy tale legends? Like, at what point are they just going to say enough is enough and, like, not go with, like, Sherlock Holmes and, like, other literary people that have nothing to do with magic or, like, zombies or anything?
See, a part of me thinks that... Do you guys ever remember... I'm sure you've seen it, the Princess Bride, where the grandfather reads from the book and that's how the story is told. There's a part of me that thinks that someone's just in a library reading books to people and that's why the stories are all mashed up. And it's just kind of like that sequence. It's not, do you know what I mean? Like, I know that sounds odd, but we do have a fairy tale book. Do you know?
Oh, and then, like, none of it's real? Right. That would be crazy.
But, oh, my God, that would just... I would die. I would just be like, what? No!
Right, but do you know what? It's not a shocking thing coming from the people who created Lost, my friends. Okay?
This is very true.
So, I mean, I don't know. There's just some... Like, the more I thought about it, and the more I was like, why would Frankenstein be... Like, it doesn't make any sense. But if each book is a land... and you have them all meshed together, it would be easy to mix up the stories and to incorporate them however you wanted.
Oh my gosh, it's like Pagemaster.
A little bit, yeah. So the end game is that it's really just somebody reading a bunch of books in a library, that it isn't really about their worlds and all of that, but somebody's creating a story out of all of these different stories kind of thing. I don't know. It just
seems... Oh,
If that's the freaking series finale, I'm going to, like, bake you cookies. And I'm going to be like, congrats for guessing.
Yes, cookies!
I think that would be really cool. I love the literary characters. Like, I love that Frankenstein's in this. And, I mean, you know, Mulan, we know, is from legend and stuff. And I'm still really pulling for Pocahontas and everything. And, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing Sherlock Holmes. I think if they could do this story's justice and not just throw it in there for the sake of throwing it in there, they could pretty much get away with everything. I mean, they've incorporated Frankenstein beautifully into the story, having him sort of be like the wizard and everything. And so I have complete faith that they could do basically whatever they want to do, and I'd still love the show.
Yeah, I mean, they do it really well. The incorporation isn't just kind of arbitrary. It's definitely there to an extent where it meshes and blends with the stories that we know. And it's awesome. I just, again, I think it's a little bit interesting that there's this literary figure. And then, of course, we had Lancelot from Arthurian legend, and we didn't get anybody else in there, but seeing Lancelot's backstory would be fantastic. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think we need more, so I would not be opposed to having Arthur around. Do you know what I mean? Like, again, it's just an interesting way to combine all of these things that don't necessarily mesh. It's one thing to have a set of fairy tales be in a place altogether. It's another when you bring in these places that they don't really have a connection to the fairy tale stories, except that they're all literary in some sense. They all stem from legend, folklore, and you know, novels. That's the only connection to everything. So, I don't know. I just thought it was kind of an interesting thought.
What if Henry is the one that's reading all the books, like, in real life, and this is, you know,
like his
completely
dream
in
sequence,
his mind?
Like his imaginary friends. That would be interesting as well. And again, it fits the idea. Like, for some reason, I just got the idea of the grandfather reading the Princess Bride story stuck in my head, and I just couldn't, like, that was what connected it for me. I know that's a really odd thing, but yeah.
No, that's awesome. I love that idea.
So I know that's one of my weird, crazy kind of theories. Do you guys have any predictions for next episode before we get too off track about the stranger? Who could the stranger be? Do you think he is related to anybody that is in Storybrooke or comes from a different place? Or is he just a regular human who accidentally, which I find hard to believe, stumbled into Storybrooke?
I sort of wonder if he's just a regular person. Like, I was thinking, wouldn't it be, like, horrible and really scary if he was a reporter or something and, like, you know, he wanted to go do a story on fishing in Maine or, you know, something like that. And then that's why he traveled to Storybrooke. And now that he's there, like, maybe he did witness something. And that's going to be, like, you know, the big conflict is that he's this reporter or something like that. And they have to stop him from reporting, you know, what he saw there.
I feel like this is going to give us a lot more insight as to how Storybrooke acts along with the rest of the country and the rest of the state, because Henry came from, he was born in a normal prison and Regina adopted him. And I want, like, at first I thought that maybe Storybrooke was enchanted so that, like, no one ever thought of it. It wasn't in any maps. It wasn't anything. It was just created. So no one really knows it exists. But then if that happens, then how did she go about legally adopting Henry with the system and everything? And so it's just like, well, maybe it's half true and, like, she can just, like, trick people into thinking something. And, like, now that the curse is lifted, people are seeing, like, Storybrooke on, like, a map or, like, on Google Earth. And they're just like, that was never there before. What the hell? What is that place? And, like, maybe it is a reporter who's just like, this place has never existed before. I came to see how it just popped up. And, it, like, it hasn't been recorded in any maps or anything. Like, that would be interesting.
Yeah. Again, with the stranger, it could be someone connected somehow. Because we know that there are people out there that are connected, that are not in Storybrooke. So where did this person come from? And being as it is a Dr. Whale kind of centric episode, is it someone from his past? Because they did talk about him impressing his father. Is this somehow his father or somehow someone related to him? And he's kind of just, you know, not acknowledging that. Like, how does that work? Is it somehow connected to Dr. Whale, I guess, is my big question.
Right. And didn't we learn in the episode where Daniel comes back to life, like, Regina had said she couldn't bring over the dead, but that wasn't true because she brought over Daniel, and Whale wanted to know if his brother was there, that maybe he'd be able to revive him or something like that. And I mean, I doubt that he was just walking around outside of Storybrooke and drove a car into, you know, Hook or whatever, but I guess it could possibly be more connected to him like that.
Yeah, I don't, again, you know, more questions than answers, gotta love it. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see who the man is, if he's connected to anyone at all, or if he is just a stranger. And if he is just a stranger, what kind of implications does that have for the rest of Storybrooke and the rest of the world, and or the rest of the people who could possibly, you know, come to Storybrooke now? I need more kind of like now.
So the first piece of listener feedback is from Sarah. And she says, because of the recent episode of Vampire Hype about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I rewatched a few of my favorite episodes. There's a part in the episode, The Gift, in which Willow says to Tara, "I will always find you." And I both laughed and groaned because on one hand, I'm so sick of that line in UWAT, but at the same time, I laughed because we all know Jane Espenson was a writer for Buffy. So I'm sitting here wondering, is there a connection between Willow and Tara and Snow and Charming? I thought that was interesting, so I thought I'd share. That is really interesting. And I actually did not know that Jane Espenson was a writer for Buffy, so that's cool.
Yeah, I would just like to say Selena will be very, very proud of that comment, that listener feedback. Because we all know that Selena is a huge Buffy junkie, and she does love Once Upon a Time. So I think it might be just a matter of the writer maybe not recycling material, but kind of utilizing it in both shows. Because let's face it, it is utilized in Once Upon a Time, like, every episode. So I think it's a really great connection. And
yeah, that's really cool. I think, yeah, I agree with you, Jen, that it's just the theme of, you know, love and finding your true love and stuff like that. And but I mean, what a connection to make. That's really pretty random, but that's cool that she found that. This one's from Tanisha, and she says, "I just finished listening to the episode," which was great, by the way. Thank you. "And one of you mentioned that you wish there was a spliced up list of all the flashbacks put in order." Hey, that was me. Well, there is one at the Once Upon a Time hub. I just recently added a timeline of all the flashbacks put into chronological order before the return of season 2. Also, while listening to you girls talk about the fairies on the show, I had somewhat of an epiphany. I don't know if anyone else has already come up with this theory, but I started thinking about how Rumpelstiltskin is always saying how magic comes with a price, and how the fairies seemingly are able to use magic without having to pay that price. But what if that wasn't the case? What if the price they have to pay is that they can never have true love? That would explain why the blue fairy was so adamant that the fairy Nova and Dreamy, Grumpy, could not be together. They have to sacrifice their chance at true love so that others can find theirs. Just a thought. First of all, thanks for pointing that out. I'm definitely going to check out that chronological order of the flashbacks and all that. That's really cool. And secondly, that's a really sad theory. I mean, the poor fairies, if they couldn't find true love, I mean, it does make sense with how they said about the blue fairy was so adamant that Nova and Dreamy couldn't be together. But that's a pretty serious price to pay, not being able to find your true love, especially for something like, you know, the Enchanted Forest and the fairy tale lands, where that's like literally what every story is about.
I think it was a really interesting theory that their consequence is not being able to love, and if they love, they lose their magic. I love that idea. Like, I really think it's cool. So great job, Tanisha. And I'm so excited about the flashbacks in chronological order. What we'll do is we'll put the link up in the post, so if you guys want to go check out the flashbacks, you can as well.
I just want to say that blew my mind. Like, just the whole, like, non-fairy thing with, like, that made so much sense. And, like, I never realized that they never really have to pay that price. And it's just like, oh my gosh. But what was, in regards to magic always costing something, and I know you guys probably discussed it in the last episode, but I didn't get a chance to listen. Have we seen the effect of Emma using magic yet? Did she pay a price for it yet?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay, so that'd be interesting. What if she turns into a fairy and she can't have true love, and she's just stuck without anyone, because everyone she loves dies or runs away?
God, you're being vicious now. Stop.
Sorry. I'll shut up now.
You're like, and she's miserable and old and unhappy. Stop. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of our podcast for this week. If you have any feedback, questions, comments, you can always reach us at onceable, onceable, at hypeable.com. You can, of course, leave comments on the podcast, and you can tweet at Once Upon News, or leave comments on any of the fabulous news articles that Selena posts. So thank you guys for listening, and we definitely look forward to talking about next week's episode, which hopefully will answer some of our questions. So I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Tariq.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.